late great saxophonist Benny Golson, who died on September 21st, 2024, at the age of 95. Benny Golson's tenor saxophone and his composition, the tune titled Stablemates. Lee Morgan was the trumpeter on this recording. Percy Heath playing the bass, Philly Joe Jones on the drums, and Ray Bryant at the piano. This is from an album titled Benny Golson and the Philadelphians. Benny Golson, one of the legendary jazz musicians to come out of the city of Philadelphia, a hotbed of jazz music development in the middle part of the 20th century, and still a strong place to go hear jazz today. We opened up the set with one from saxophonist John Coltrane, who was born in North Carolina but was a resident of Philadelphia in the 1940s and 1950s when he was reaching the peak of his early development. And we'll hear more about that in just a moment. But John Coltrane opening up the set with his 1963 recording, including McCoy Tyner at the piano, Jimmy Garrison on bass, and Roy Haynes playing drums. After the Rain, that from the album Impressions from John Coltrane. Well, as we talk just a little bit about Philadelphia and we play the music of John Coltrane and Benny Golson, I wanted to reach back to an interview that I recorded on a cassette tape 20-plus years ago. This was done back around 2001 in Chicago. The subject of the interview was not really Benny Golson's own music, but it was his relationship with John Coltrane. You see, the two were teenagers together, discovering the music and exploring the music and learning the music together as residents of the city of Philadelphia. And Benny Golson told me about their meeting. They had bonded over the saxophone work of alto man Johnny Hodges and then had their minds completely turned around by Charlie Parker, but they had some great experiences together in their youth. And so even though Benny Golson is talking here to some extent about John Coltrane, his teenage buddy, it also reflects quite a bit on Benny Golson's early years, and you get a flavor for what it was like coming up as a jazz musician at that time.
I first met John when I was 16. I don't remember exactly the year. I'd have to do some math. But a fellow in high school who played alto sax, I played tenor sax, told me about a new guy in town that was living in the projects where he was living that played alto, and he sounded just like Johnny Hodges. Well, that was pre-Charlie Parker, so Johnny Hodges was the barometer. And when he said that to me, I said, wow, sounds like Johnny Hodges. He said, yeah, just like him. So I said, bring him by my house tomorrow after school, because we were in high school. And sure enough, about 4 o'clock that afternoon, Howard was the fellow's name. Howard showed up, and he had this fellow with him, sort of like a country bumpkin, standing down on the steps on the sidewalk. Howard was standing on the steps, and he was kind of biting his thumbnail, you know, just kind of shy-like. And anyway, they came in, and Howard sat down, and John stood by the door like he was waiting to be told what to do. And kids or something. And I said to him, play something. And it was like that's what he was waiting for me to say. And he opened his horn up and he put his horn, case up and took his horn out. And he started playing. And what else? On the Sunny Side of the Street, Johnny Hodges' featured number. And sure enough, he sounded just like Johnny Hodges, with even a bigger sound. And my goodness, my mother had heard all of our, I call them AM sessions because they weren't qualified jam sessions, and she knew that this sound was different than any sound she ever heard coming from the living room downstairs. So she shouted down there, "Who is that?" Which was really a put down to me. And I said, "Well, it's a new friend I just met named John Coltrane." So that's how we met. Thereafter, whenever John came there, whenever we were going to have our jam sessions, she would always holler downstairs, "Is John down there yet?" Which meant that when he came, he had to play on the Sunny Side of the Street.
She wanted to hear him play that like Johnny Hodges?
It was a little better than what we'd been doing. Yeah, John was 16, I was 16, John was 18. That's when we met.
At the beginning, he played alto for some period of time before coming into switching over to the tenor primarily. He really had a pretty heavily Johnny Hodges-influenced sound back at that time?
Initially, it was Johnny Hodges until we went to a concert and heard Charlie Parker and Dizzy Gillespie. Then it underwent a drastic change.
I understand that the two of you both saw Charlie Parker play for, that was the first time for both of you seeing Charlie Parker perform?
Together. Yeah, we almost fell over the balcony. We were all the way up at the top. We just couldn't believe anybody could play like that. Yeah, it was quite an experience.
Do you recall what you might have said to each other back at that time after watching, listening, experiencing this music?
We weren't saying anything. We were screaming. And he was trying to climb up my body, and I was trying to climb up his. I mean, you have to understand, this was not a superlative performance. It was a performance that we had never heard before, music we had never heard before. Strange, but exciting at the same time. We wanted to know what it was all about. You know, we couldn't understand how anybody could play like that.
So there was a big musical revelation for both of you at that time.
Yeah, we called it Epiphany. Yes, definitely.
The two of you spent a lot of time practicing then, as you said, in your jam sessions or your AM sessions. That would have been in your home back at that time?
In my living room. Oh, we're together almost every day. Every day. Just the two of us. I would try to play some chords for him, which was pretty sad. And then he would in turn try to play some chords while I...
On the piano?
Yes, while I played, which was even sadder. But we only had each other. And in between, we played the 78 records to try to decipher what they would... What are they doing? What is he playing there? And we'd play it over and over and over. And then we'd try to emulate it. And then we'd have our jam sessions, AM sessions. And there were quite a few of them. And John was faithful. He was always there. Another one that was there, Ray Bryant. Ray was 14 and a genius. He was a genius. I mean, this guy could play anything he could play. He could play in any key. He was far advanced for his age, for 14 years old. He was incredible. But and we had other fellows, too, that nobody would know about. But, yeah, Steve Davis was there, too. We were in elementary school together, who eventually played bass with John Coltrane. He's dead now, deceased. But Steve used to come to our jam sessions, too, and it was really funny because he had no cover for his bass, and he used to just carry his bass around on his arm, and he had a white stripe painted around the edge of the bass, which we thought was pretty cool, you know. Get on the streetcars with the bass, no cover on it, you know.
I understand from all accounts that Philadelphia was must have been just an incredible place to be learning jazz and coming up in that environment back at that time in the 1940s, I guess we're talking about right now.
Yes, exactly. It was. It was fertile. It was really fertile. It was a time of epiphanies, one after the other. It was just constant epiphanies because we were in the process of learning, and we were eclectic. We were copying. We were supposing, what if, you know, a lot of what ifs, maybe, can I, will I, during that time because nothing was happening. We were rank amateurs, you know. All that we ever hoped to be was in front of us, and we didn't know to what extent we would be good at what we were doing. So we were struggling, yeah. And you know, John Coltrane became a fantastic person musically, but during that time, neither one of us was too fantastic because we both were in a band together, and we got put out of that band for poor musicianship. We got put out. It broke our hearts, but we laughed about it years later. Oh, we laughed about it together. They put us out. We were that bad.
Made you try harder, probably, Phil.
Absolutely. Yeah. I loved him, though. I still miss him. You know, who would miss a man that had talent like that? Aside from the talent, he was my dear friend. I mean, we were together every day. And you know what I regret? We never took any pictures together. I had a picture. We were in the same band, that band that we got put out of, where we were in the band together. And I had a picture of us, and I lost it, and it's gone forever. I don't know what happened. Because during that time, you figure it's not that important, you know. But years later, you say, oh, why didn't I keep that photograph? I lament about that.
Just like all that music that gets lost in the air forever when it's performed and not recorded.
Goes into the medium of the air, and that's it. It's gone. We won't soon forget John Coltrane. It's always a delight to recall some of the things that we did, you know, growing up as kids, some of the things that we laughed about later in life. You know, we got put out of that band, and when we came back to my house, my mother thought that they were playing without us, and John said, oh, no, they wouldn't do that, because we were told that the job was canceled. But it wasn't, you see. And so my mother said, it was me, I'd go find out. So we went there and heard them playing without us. And so we came back, we were so depressed. I think John would have cried. I think I would have cried if we hadn't been in each other's company. And so we were standing there really like two lost kids, and my mother saw it, and she come put her arm around both of us and squeezed us, and she made the statement. She said, "Don't worry, baby." She says, "One day you'll be so good they won't be able to afford you." But of course we didn't believe her because we'd just gotten fired, you know, put out of the band, silently put out of the band. And so years later we were up at Newport warming up, and we happened to be in the same tent. And John was warming up on his soprano, and all of a sudden he took the horn out of his mouth and started laughing. And I said, "What?" He said, "Remember what your mother told us?" I said, "Yeah." And he recalled it. He says, "Well, they're still there, and we're here."
Now they couldn't afford you anymore.
That's right.
Well, we won't soon forget saxophonist and jazz composer, jazz great Benny Golson. He died on the 21st of September at the age of 95, one of our great living masters who has now made his transition. But I hope you enjoyed that conversation from back in 2001. Benny Golson talking about his teenage friend that came up through the jazz ranks right alongside him and went on to greatness, John Coltrane. Benny Golson, in his own right, the composer of such jazz classics as Along Came Betty, Blues March, Killer Joe, Blues On Down, Little Karen, and so many more. Here's the Art Farmer Benny Golson Jazz Tet with Benny Golson's composition, Five Spot After Dark.
Killer Joe.
A pair of jazz classics from the pen of saxophonist and composer Benny Golson. We opened the set with a tune called Five Spot After Dark and closed it with the classic Killer Joe, the late great Benny Golson, part of a slowly vanishing great generation of jazz musicians. And that closes it out for this edition of Jazz from the Heart of America here on VOA. I'm Dan Binder. Be sure to join me again at this same time next week for another program spotlighting some of the finest examples of musical creativity that come from within this art form we call jazz. The program comes to you each week from the studios of WDCB, the radio station known as Chicago's Home for Jazz, located on the campus of College of DuPage in Glen Ellyn, Illinois, USA. Thanks again for being along with me to enjoy the music together. I'm already looking forward to sharing more of these great sounds with you soon. For now, until the next time we talk, keep the rhythm of jazz in your step as you walk. Be cool, like Killer Joe.